This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Everybody, Alan Ellis here, and we're joined by Marty Gary, Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning, Alan.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me in.
Oh, glad to do it. How's Fishing Challenge shaping up?
It's looking good. We're moving along kind of as we do year to year, approaching the 1,000 entrant threshold, and
yeah.
I think we're at 9 and change right now, and I think probably in the next week or so we'll go over that. So the number of citations keep rolling in, and Ocean City's driving a lot of that right now.
Sure. I'm seeing marlin. I'm seeing a lot of marlin on the citation center.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and, you know, White Marlin Open coming up. There'll be a lot more excitement going on down in Ocean City. But things are going well with the challenge. Most of our youth events have wrapped up, and I think we've had another good year with that. And then, of course, Diamond Jim continues. So... yeah, a little over 4 weeks or so to go.
Yeah.
And things are going well, and we're excited.
Now, you got blown out on Diamond Jim when you were supposed to be tagging the August fish, right? The weather came in and kind of knocked down your opportunity there.
That was the first time we've had to cancel one of those trips, and it kind of even surprised me. A couple of the charter captains called, you know, the afternoon before, and said it was puffing up out there. I just don't want the kids to, you know, we have a lot of kids, as you know, that go out and
right.
Just didn't want them to have a miserable experience out there.
Exactly right. Yeah.
But we'll go out Thursday.
Yeah, go out Thursday and catch those fish from now till the end of the contest. And that makes the August edition of Diamond Jim worth $25,000, right?
It does. And, you know, we still got a day or two here, I guess, ahead of us for that July fish. And,
sure.
And they are catching them, Alan. We can't until they're fully certified, you know, say it's a done deal. But 4 2012 tags have been called in.
Good.
And including one I just saw yesterday from a gentleman from Pasadena.
Good.
So they'll be taking a polygraph. And,
yep.
And I think they're all scheduled for next week. So hopefully we'll have some news out on those folks.
Sure. Now, the polygraph simply eliminates anybody who may have caught one commercially, or someone in their family, or someone associate that they might have known who caught one, you know, in a net or hook and line commercially, or whatever it might be, and that's happened in the past a few times, I'm sure. And I know that the polygraph basically says, did you catch this on rod and reel? Did you recreationally catch this fish? And did you personally catch this fish? And that type of thing. And it kind of eliminates anybody that wants to try and fib. And like I said, I know that happened a number of times. I'm sure there are. You could probably write, if not a note, a Reader's Digest article on some of the summaries of some of those alleged people that caught the Diamond Jim fish, huh?
Yeah, it's been interesting. At first I was a little bit I don't know if the word's jaded or what you want to call it, but. I think it, for some people, I think it's, they think it, they look at it, particularly maybe some of the watermen that and I want to portray all the watermen this way, but some of them thought a little bit of a game or something they could play, but who really knows?
If they can work the system and get one up on DNR, they're going to try and do it, you know, somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'll tell you, in working with Maryland Loves Crabs magazine, we talked to an awful lot of people out there, some watermen that were just, I mean, you know, first-class individuals, and you know there are some bad apples, and you know they've been some of them have been caught and re-caught, but for the most part, the entire waterman community patrols its own, and if you give the profession a bad name, or if you do things that are going to cause somebody to lose income, they're going to take care of that internally. They are definitely going to take care of that internally. And, you know, having the ranks self-patrolled is a pretty good thing. You know, because, you know, most of these guys are out there trying to make an honest living, most of them. There are some who will try to gain the system one way or the other. And there's no question about that. The buyers know who they are. The, you know, the people in the business know who they are. And the ranks know who they are. And so, you know, even if DNR may or may not know who they are. So I gained a brand new respect for the people that make their living on the water here in the last little while. And working with the Fishing Challenge and working with the seafood people and that type of thing, it's a damn hard job to do. It really is.
Yeah, I think with your publication, you come in contact with those folks and you really get to know them. And,
yeah.
And you get that respect. But, yeah, I'd be the first, and all my colleagues would also share that, you know, we couldn't do our job without cooperative work with them, collecting data. They've been very generous over the decades
and sure.
working with them. So that community is very important to, you know, the co-management of these fisheries.
Yep, exactly. So what's the latest on the fisheries side, Marty, that you can share with us, that you want to share with us? There was a press release came out this week about a target date, and I'm not exactly sure what that was. Can you help us out?
I'm not real dialed in on that, but generally speaking, what they're talking about is like a control date.
Yeah.
And they're looking, it's sort of for a historical reference point for the commercial striped bass fishery, and this is something that's consistent in a lot of other fisheries. Just to kind of give you an example, might not be perfectly analogous, but for the summer flounder fishery, quota allocation for the different states up and down the Atlantic seaboard is based on a reference period and for commercial and recreational, I think it's like 1993 to 1996. So they look retrospectively at what was caught during that time frame to determine allocations. But as you drill down deeper in terms of limited entry fisheries, those are for commercial fisheries. Those are fisheries where you have certain specific people that are eligible. They look at their participation based on a control date. You know, if you're part of that, if you meet the criteria, in other words, if you were participating prior to the start of that control date or when that control date ends, in this case, I think, I'm not sure which one they're floating out. I think it's February 29th of...
Yeah, that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's more of a cutoff.
Yeah, but it's a February 29th date. Mm-hmm. I'd find that interesting. It's a date that only comes up
once every four years, right?
2012,
Yeah.
But
it could be because that was the end of... That would have been the last month... I mean, the last day...
Right.
Of the commercial striped bass fishery
exactly.
for this year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And that's the day that's the day they want to.
Right.
According to Larry Sims, the president of the Maryland Watermen's Association, one of our goals in developing management options has been the security of full-time watermen and the reduction of latent or unused permits. Establishing a control date will help us meet this goal. And see, I'm not sure how that whole industry works and what that exactly means. But they're looking back at February 29th and saying, use that date, and I guess the harvest up to that date, the commercial harvest up to that date, to set your parameters for the coming years.
Well, mostly I think for participation. They're looking at that as a benchmark. For them, who actually participated? Because you have 1,231 people who can participate, Alan, but they don't all participate.
Right.
So they're using that as a cutoff. So they're saying basically as of February 29th, the last day of this year's commercial striped bass fishery, for gillnet at least, from that point backward, who was participating? So they look at that. So there may be people that have been holding one of those 1,231 spots, but they haven't been participating at all. They're
right.
just holding it because they think it's valuable.
Yep.
And I think at some point, you know, they may or may not look at options to pare that number down somehow based on historical participation in the fishery. And again, I don't know all the details, but I think that's kind of, you know, what they're looking at.
Okay.
And that's not inconsistent with the way a lot of other fisheries have been run. I think that's what's going on with a lot of, you know, what's going on here in Maryland in terms of, you know, you've heard a little bit about the Leighton effort and the blue crab fishery.
Sure,
a lot
sure,
of people,
sure.
A lot of capacity, is a term they use in the fishery. So if it was a gold rush situation, you have the potential for all these people to come rushing into the fishery, and it diminishes the economic return to the individuals.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Larry and the leadership, I think, are probably looking for the people that are really truly participating. And so to, you know, if that gold rush hits and they have them and you do have a good thing going, that you don't have all this flood come in and it can kind of control that for those
right.
people that are really been participating and,
sure.
and whatnot.
Well, you know, I think in talking to people that hold licenses that have had them and don't participate, the latent licenses mm-hmm. that you call it. Some of those people are waiting for retirement. Some of those people are waiting for better economic opportunity. Some of those people are just saying, well, I'm just going to hold on to it. I can pass it on to my kids if they want to do that and that type of thing. And I see the reasoning for some of the people to have it. Now, the department did do a buyback on the latent crab licenses, the commercial crabbing licenses, with limited success. I mean, there were a number of them. But, you know, the question is, you reached out to all those people. Some of them didn't want to part with their license. Some of them saw that, you know, the $2,700 or $3,000 or whatever it was, they saw that down the road, you know, that they're going to retire in 2 years and they're going to, you know, they're going to equip their boat and they're going to go crabbing and they're going to make some money on it. And I understand that. And I understand the same thing with the latent waterman's licenses on the fishery side. So, you know, you guys are doing what you can by identifying the license holders. But, you know, keep in mind human nature. They don't want to give up what they've got, thinking that the perception is I'll never get this back again, you know, and I'm going to hang on to it till X in the future. I mean, you watch American Pickers. You see these guys that have a yard full of motorcycles or Volkswagens or whatever it might be all rust into pieces. And the pickers go and talk to them, hey, you want to sell that for X amount? Now I'm going to restore that. Well, it's day by day, it's rusting away to nothing. And that's kind of the analogy that I use is that, you know, what are you going to do with it? You know, here's an opportunity to cash in. Here's an opportunity to make some money. Here's an opportunity to. Now I'm going to hang on to it. It's that same kind of mindset, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to some of our callers. We've got Mr. Dale in Easton. Good morning, Dale. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. Mr. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dale. Great to hear your voice.
Yeah, when's your daughter head back?
She will be back to school in probably about another 2 weeks and excited for another fall
junior?
Football season. She'll be a senior, Dale.
Oh, my Lord.
Going fast, isn't it?
God, don't blink.
And my son will be off as a freshman, so.
Going to A&M?
No, LSU.
Oh, that pleases your daughter immensely, I'm sure.
Oh, geez, yeah, so it's going to be an interesting fall. But I hope you all going well with you, Dale?
Not bad. I don't know whether you can expound on it or not, but the first round of the JI was done. Any thing you can relate to us?
Yeah, I honestly haven't. I've seen Harry a couple of times. I haven't really talked to him. And I don't know what's going on with that, Dale. I wish I they did have that first round. I'm kind of kicking myself a little bit. I should have probably just kind of stopped in his office and asked, but I don't honestly know.
For those of you who are not following the code, Dale is a former fisheries chief, speaking with Marty, who is fisheries biology. A what?
Just an Indian, not a chief.
Oh, well, yeah, you're a chief. But anyway, when they talk about when biologists talk to each other, they speak in code. So JI means Striped Bass Juvenile Index. The first leg of that has been conducted where they go out and they net various sites on the Chesapeake Bay to find out if the rockfish are reproducing. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. The JI, Marty. That's what we're talking about here. So
yeah, I didn't know whether the department was going to make a statement or not, Marty. I mean, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Yeah, early on, yeah, I haven't heard anything, Dale. I think a lot of that might be there. We've been pretty well absorbed with this cost recovery discussion.
Right.
And Harry and his group are doing his thing, but I just haven't heard anything so far.
The population is so strong, though, Marty. Years mm-hmm. past, as you well know, that was the number one topic, and that was about as closely guarded secret as the nuclear codes.
Yeah,
right. So it'll be interesting too, because this season, and Yeah, but I'd be personally interested, Dale, in what your projection, your speculation of what it will be, because we had that warm, well, relatively warm winter, but an incredibly dry March, and I think even April got off to a pretty dry start.
Right.
So it's, you know, from my exposure to talking to you folks and all the folks that really have been out there, boots on the ground in the spring, up in those spawning areas, those are typically years that we see a lower number, I think.
Right, Although, as Joe Boone used to say, Marty, the more you do it, the less you know.
Right.
You get an idea, but every time you think you've got it figured out, it comes back and kicks you in the butt.
Exactly.
Kind of like deer hunting.
Yeah. Exactly.
I know exactly what those deer are going to be doing today, and then the wind blows out of the south, and nothing happens right. But, yeah. So, anyway, juvenile index, first round has been completed, and we don't know yet, but we did have a tremendously warm spring. Marty, in your opinion, do you believe that the striped bass spawned early this year with the temperatures spiking in early on, or do you think it was more of a standard spawn?
Well, as, you know, as Dale says, we think we know, but based on what I think I know, and what I heard from different fishermen, including the people that were out there early, it does look like that there was a major pulse of fish that spawned early. It looks very similar to, I believe the year was 2002, similar climatic elements. And, you know, we saw a good start for the first 3 or 4 days, but then it just went really south after that. You could just tell the fish weren't there.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you agree with that, Dale, you think?
Yeah. Also, too, I did talk with some of the folks that did the Upper Bay, and they saw a pretty good number of females, but they didn't see a lot of males, which I thought was interesting.
Okay. But, all right.
Alan, if you could get Marty aside, he should write a book on the contest.
Oh, no doubt.
He's told me stories, Alan, that they couldn't have come out of Hollywood.
No question about it. No question about
it. Get him aside, and he will be rolling on the floor. And I'll
no doubt.
After.
Oh, I've heard a couple of them, no doubt.
So. Yeah, but he needs to sit down and put pen to paper.
Sure. All right, Dale. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Marty.
See you. Thanks, Dale.
All right, Jerry, we're going to talk to Jerry about boating, and then we must take a break. We're behind time here. So, Jerry, what's up, buddy?
I'm surprised you're not talking about one of the severe problems with the recreational boating industry, which is dying. This rotten ethanol that Congress is putting in gasoline simply to get the farmers to vote for them in the Midwest is
Jerry,
ridiculous.
Jerry, didn't we have this conversation a couple of weeks ago?
I haven't talked to you about it.
Really? Okay. Well, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. And the higher increase in ethanol in the boat motor fuel is destroying a lot of motors out there that are not set up for it. Your car has a little stronger motor in it that can handle that, and you know, it's a percentage thing. And you're right; it does prop up the corn farmer. And right now, I'm not sure where that's going to go with this year's drought. You know, it's going to drive the price of corn and fuel and everything else through the roof here in the next year or so. And
I begged my local marina guy to come and tow my boat away because if I didn't start it every 3 days, it wouldn't start.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know what to do if I can't give a boat away. Nobody wants to buy a boat. Well, who's, you know, is Congress, making jobs or are they killing jobs?
Well, they're killing jobs in the marine industry, but it's not just that, Jerry, as far as the fuel is concerned. And you can't blame it all on ethanol. You know, the boat is primarily a luxury item, so to speak, or a non-necessity, and people are just trying to make a living and not worrying about their recreational boating. And, you know, people who own boats know that they're extremely, depending on, of course, the size and, you know, the upkeep, are extremely expensive. And, you know, if you can't pay your electric bill, you're sure as hell not going to pay your slip fee. So, you know, I mean, I certainly understand the concern of the industry, but right now in this economy and until hopefully November, till we see some light at the end of the tunnel, it's just going to be the way it is, and ethanol is just another part of that. So.
Well, I moved to Maryland 30 years ago and went with the American Dream and bought a house on the water and did all the good things.
Yeah.
And I had a boat that I could start it twice a year if I wanted to, but not anymore.
I understand.
$300 every time I want to take it out. So I begged the guy, says, take it away. I've got a friend that bought a boat for $35,000, nice big boat.
Yeah.
And about 3 years ago, unfortunately, he died 2 years ago. His wife can't give that boat away.
Yep.
$35,000.
Hey, look, it's not just the ethanol. It's the general economy.
No, it's not the economy.
Okay. Have a nice day, Jerry. Thanks. We've got to take a break. Let me tell you about the Maryland Fishing Channel. It's not the economy, folks. Just so you know, Jerry subscribes to the same theory as... and if you have a business, you didn't do that. No. Somebody else did that for you. Wish somebody else would pay my bill here at the station. Oh, did I politicize there for just a minute? I apologize. No, I don't. It's time for the Maryland Fishing Challenge. And the ramrod of the Maryland Fishing Challenge, Marty Gary, is sitting right here with us. You could win great prizes like the grand prize boat motor and trip. So I have to read this right. I have to do this, you know, sharp and crisp and clear. Should I start over? It's time for the Maryland Fishing Challenge. You could win great prizes like the grand prize boat motor and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shops, or thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center, or a vacation from the World Fishing Network. From now through Labor Day, all you have to do is go fishing. And if you're lucky enough to catch a Maryland Citation-sized fish and certify your catch, you're in. It's that easy. There are more than 60 species of fish in freshwater, tidal rivers, Chesapeake Bay, and on the Atlantic coast that qualify. Nearly 1,000 folks have had citations this year so far, and they're going to all be invited to the grand finale, and you can too. So stop by your local fishing citation center. Visit www.dnr.maryland.gov, and that will give you all the details on the 2012 Maryland Fishing Challenge, and this year honoring Maryland's own Lefty Cray. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov, or listen to the Outdoorsman radio show. The question is, are you feeling lucky? I feel lucky all the time. I'm blessed, no question about it. Hey, no such thing as luck. Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. Summer is the time for picnics and family get-togethers and camping trips. And summer is corn on the cob and steamed crabs and fresh tomatoes. Summer is cold, juicy watermelons. Can't go without my watermelon. The Schillinger family at Papa John's Farm. They're in Severn. They like to steam their corn on the cob that they grow on the farm with their own crabs for a great family dinner. And if you enjoy your time outdoors with great tasting food, I'd like to recommend Schillinger's Papa John's Farm in Severn, Maryland, at their enormous produce barn right there, New Cut Road. Their own tasty, super sweet corn, homegrown tomatoes are ready. Their squash, zucchini, peppers, onions, green beans, cucumbers, mouthwatering cantaloupes, and sweet, sweet watermelons. Papa John's Farm, located just off I-97, exit 12, that's 8065 New Cut Road in Severn. That number, 410-969-8810. Papa John's Farm is open every day, Monday to Saturday, from 9 to 7, Sunday 9 to 6. That phone number again, 410-969-8810. Visit Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Jennifer Kishinko. What did the housing bust, financial crisis, and ensuing wave of foreclosures and layoffs mean for our credit scores? Apparently, almost nothing. The average FICO score, the number most lenders use to gauge a potential borrower's credit worthiness, stood at 690 in April. That's roughly in line with both last year's average score and the average in 2007, before the market meltdown and recession wiped out a lot of wealth. Credit experts offer two possible explanations for how the nation's most crucial measure of credit worthiness can withstand all manner of financial turmoil. Either something is off with FICO's formula, or the numbers have lost much of their meaning. FICO defends its calculations. FICO says more consumers have moved away from the middle in both directions, keeping the average score roughly the same. But critics argue that FICO scores are no longer a good predictor of a borrower's likelihood of repayment. Others say the scores don't have the ability to detect a worsening credit environment. I'm Jennifer Kishinko with the Wall Street Journal Report.
Quietus contains homeopathic ingredients traditionally used to provide relief.
Can you hear that sound? That ringing. That hissing.
I can't get to sleep with it.
I can't concentrate. I hear it constantly. Everywhere I go. It doesn't go away. It drives me nuts.
It's tinnitus.
A constant ringing in your ear caused by loud machines.
Loud music.
Ah, finally. Quietus.
I love Quietus.
I couldn't believe it. No more ringing in the ears. No more hissing sound.
Quiet relief so I can work.
No more ringing. No more loud fans.
And I sleep like a baby.
If you're suffering from tinnitus, I urge you to try Quietus.
After trying Quietus, the ringing stopped, and I felt like I got my life back.
Quietus is real, my friend.
Quietus has changed my life.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Oh, man, hunting season right around the corner. Can't wait. Cannot wait. So we'll see what happens. Marty, we were just talking off the air about the basically the food chain and the success of the Young of the Year spawning survey. We looked on the Angler's Log, and you can link right to the Angler's Log off the when you go to log on to the podcast on Ellis Outdoors and listen to this rebroadcast of this show. There's a log there, or a logo there for the Angler's Log. You click on that, it takes you to the Angler's Log. And one of the interns wrote a report on the Young of the Year survey, and you know, just basically his impressions of the seining and that type of thing. And you know, we were talking about that, and then we talked about the weather impacting the Young of the Year. Tell us a little bit about what you were saying about the weather and the nutrients and the zooplankton and that type of thing.
Sure, thanks, Alan. Yeah, I think a lot of folks that have watched this closely have noticed that in 1993 and 1996, 2001, those were the years. And then again last year, where we had these major dominant year classes. Those are the four biggest in history, by the way. They all sort of had something in common. They tended to be springs that were cooler, that had higher levels of precipitation. So you had high flow rates coming in from the tributaries. And there's a couple of researchers out of the Oxford Laboratory, which is a joint venture between NOAA and DNR, that looked at long-range forecasting tied into environmental conditions. And they found these oscillations, these ups and downs in trends of reproductive potential with not just striped bass, but a suite of anadromous fish species, the clupeids, the herrings and the shads, yellow perch, white perch. And then they also found that there's another group of fish, the drums, croakers, spot, menhaden, what we call the continental shelf spawners. And there was an inverse relationship when conditions were good environmentally for the anadromous species like striped bass, the menhaden were not reproductively as successful. And so, these are conditions that you can't really control. It's Mother Nature. It's the environment. With striped bass in particular, you know, a lot of folks just noticed this wet, cool spring, high flow phenomenon. But Bob Wood and Ed Martinez are the two researchers out of Oxford. The fundamental of what they looked at was these long-term weather patterns and, again, tying into the basic essential food needs of these larval fish that hatch out. So, you know, you have in any given year, and we still believe this, we have a high population of the brood stock. And it's down a little bit from its peak several years ago, but it's still relatively high. So we believe in any given year the potential is there if the environmental conditions allow it. But when you have a dry year, and then I'm just wondering, you know, how this will play out this year, the thought is you have a dry spring, you don't get that little burst of nutrient enrichment, which fuels phytoplankton growth, which in turn fuels zooplankton, and that's what the little baby rockfish are looking for when they first hatch out, and along with the white perch, et cetera. So those first few days are critical. They've got to have sustenance. They have to have food. And if it's not there, even though you essentially had a successful spawn, you don't wind up having the great numbers, the elevated numbers.
Because the nutrients haven't been washed into the bay that supplies the food for the phytoplankton, which is fed on by the zooplankton, which is fed on by the baby rockfish.
As I understand it. I hope I understand it.
Well, no, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, like I said, follow the food chain. But, you know, like you said, in a dry year, it's tougher for the fish to survive because they don't have anything to eat.
Right.
Very simple. I mean, it's simple biology. If you don't have anything to eat, you're going to die. And that's where we are in a sensitive stage of these little tiny fry rockfish that have just been hatched. So they've got to have something to eat. If they don't have the nutrients, they don't have the phytoplankton. Is that the word, phyto?
That's right, the plant plankton.
The plant plankton that feeds the animal plankton, which are the zooplankton, which feeds the baby rockfish. So the recruitment or the survival rate is based on having enough food to sustain themselves and grow.
That's the thought.
And the thought is that on wetter years, there's more of that progression, more of that nutrient phytozooplankton connection, as opposed to a dry year where those nutrients are not being washed into the bay, therefore not a high amount of phytoplankton is not spawned, which means that there's not enough food for the zooplankton to sustain a population large enough to sustain the tiny fry rockfish. Am I getting that right?
That's right. I think it's the simplest way to explain it, and that's not a new.
In nature, basically, you follow the food,
right?
Unlike politics, where you follow the money, but same kind of thing. But yeah, it certainly makes sense that in a wetter year, you're going to have better recruitment because of those things. Now, what about crabs? How do we relate that?
Ooh, boy, you got me on that one.
Let me call Oxford.
Yeah, I don't.
Here we go.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's a topic for another day, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is really fascinating, though. I mean, you think you have everything, you know everything, but
That's why we have people that are constantly curious and constantly out there seeking ways to learn things, and I think that's great. And I hope I'm one of those people that want to keep open to learning new things, and I think I'm doing a fair job on that. But let's change gears. Let's go back to the fishing challenge here for a minute. Have there been any unusual catches this year that you've made note of?
Well, we haven't any state records, which has kind of surprised me.
Three last year?
Yeah, there were three last year.
Did we have a state record blue cat this year?
I mean, I'll have to double check, Alan.
I'm pretty sure we had an 80-pound.
Maybe very early on.
Yeah, very early.
So we might still have a plaque being given away. It's possible.
Yeah.
But I think we had the muskie broken last year. And I think we had a gar, which was unusual. So that part of it has been quiet. The one thing that strikes me as being kind of interesting this year is it isn't a big fish citation type of thing. Has been the prevalence of these young red drum. I don't know if you want to call them puppy drum.
You've
heard that.
Oh yeah, I've heard that. I had a buddy caught a dozen of them the other day in a little chop tank.
Mm-hmm.
They're I don't know what the age class is on them, but they're basically foot long red drum, and there's just a billion of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Multiple. Thousands of them out there.
And I don't know if, again, it's a function of the dry year and they've just salinity's up and they've spread out. But I don't know if we didn't realize this and it wasn't intended to come out this way. But the Red Drum in the Citation Award Program is a catch and release only
right
for any size.
Really?
Yes.
Woohoo!
So,
for you.
But it has given us some insight on where some of these fish are turning up. So, you know, what I'm saying is a few of these smaller fish have been turned in for an award, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, people are having fun. That's what it's all about. But there was one turned in the other day from Stony Creek off the Patapsco.
Really?
Yeah. Now, and then the Severn. So you've heard about them.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
Your comings and goings. But they're really all over the place.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Interesting. Let's talk to Walt in Catonsville. Good morning, Walt. How are you?
Hi. Good morning, Alan and Marty.
What's up?
Yeah, I've got a couple questions for you. Well, the first one is I have a I've spoken to you a few times.
Yeah.
And there's a spot that I hold fishing, and it's kind of like my own spot because not many people. I've never actually seen a boat in my area, and I have fish holding at 52 feet in an area, and it's like my nursery place, and then there's real close to that there's a point and it comes up to 20 feet and when the fish are 52 feet you can't get them to eat anything,
right?
And as soon as they come up they'll start taking the bait.
Sure.
Now what I've noticed now,
Walt,
is,
what are the GPS coordinates in that? Okay,
Alan knows where it is.
All right.
Okay, and what I've found is 2 weeks ago, I was catching tons of 18 to 24-inch fish. Now, I'm marking hundreds and hundreds of fish smaller than that because I can discern through my on my mark the size of the fish. And I've noticed this week that the fish over 18 have moved away from this spot.
Well, now, I don't know how long you've listened to this show, but many years ago, and I repeat this from time to time, fish swim.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. Marty can attest to this, that a couple of the Diamond Jim tagged fish were caught how far from where they were tagged?
I had one traveled over 70 miles in 2 days.
Wow.
We tagged it down south of Drum Point, and it was caught by a person surf fishing off the rocks up at Tallchester. Yeah, it was amazing.
Well, my question is my holding school, my nursery is what I call it, is still there. But it seems like the larger fish have moved away from that school of fish.
Yeah. Don't know the answer. I don't know. Do you know, Marty? Any ideas?
Well, when you say nursery, do you mean when you're seeing...
It's a spot that for the last 3 years I've been doing this, and they hold from probably the end of May, maybe 1st of June, all the way through November. They hold in this one spot, and they come out of that spot to feed. I've already been on breaking fish.
But you're seeing these smaller fish, but you're not seeing the ones that are of legal size.
The keeper fish, the 18 and up fish have seemed to move this week.
Yeah, when you say smaller, do you mean fish that are like 9, 10, 11 inches?
No, I'm
12?
Talking about fish, 14 to 17 and a half.
No, just not quite there.
Or 16 inches, 14 to 16.
Walt, has anything changed with the food? I mean, have the alewives moved out and the bay shiners moved in?
I still got bait. I'm still holding bait. These fish are still coming to the surface, and they're still working the bait. And I've noticed that the larger fish have moved away from this group.
Yeah. But you're going to stay on the small fish and keep fishing for them rather than go look for the bigger fish.
No. I've been looking for the bigger fish.
Yeah,
I make my runs, and I have located some small pods.
Yeah.
But not what I call this holding pen.
Yeah.
And also, I was
now, is this something that happens seasonally? I mean, has this happened last year, before?
No, it did not happen last year. They held location where I'm fishing, I went up into the headwaters of that, or so-called headwaters, several miles from there, and I noticed that I had water I could see down 12 feet.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, around some piers or stuff, but I'm thinking that we had this influx of storms and fresh water, and I'm wondering if the smaller fish are more adept to dealing with some fresher water than the larger fish. Is there any connection to that?
I yield to the biologist.
That's why I'm calling.
Well, what you're describing, when you have an influx of what we call turbidity, a suspended particulate matter in the water, and we've seen this on the spawning grounds. That's probably the most vivid example I can use where fish will clearly avoid those areas and they'll move further down. Like in the chop tank, I work several springs on the spawning stock survey for striped bass. And we would have in wet years, like Alan and I were discussing earlier, the major spawn would happen well below Ganey's Wharf, down below the Dover Bridge. In drier years, it would be up more north toward the confluence of the Tuckahoe River. So they definitely fish, at least in the spawning areas, but I've seen them avoid those areas like somebody might avoid a smoke-filled room. But I don't think it's based on size. I think if you know, they're
gonna... I think you might have hit something there on Walt when you talk about the influx of fresh water. Is salt water more buoyant than fresher water? I mean, does fresher water tend to go?
It's denser. It sinks.
I mean, so, you know. I mean, there's going to be a water. There's going to be a break line there, Walt.
I do see a break line.
Yeah, maybe the larger
or something like that.
Yeah, maybe the smaller fish are not. Are more, like you said, more adaptable to the lower salinity than the bigger fish. I don't know.
Right, and the temperature's only changing 1 degree.
Yeah.
We had the storms and all of the beginning of this week, last weekend.
Yeah.
The water temperature changed maybe 2 degrees. It's flashed back and forth, but it's 1.5 to 2 degrees is the
right
temperature change.
Okay.
The two variables that seem to affect their distribution the most are food availability, which we talked about,
right.
And then the other one is dissolved oxygen at this time of the year.
Yeah.
But if you're seeing younger fish, that DO is not going to, I mean, that there's adequate DO. They're going to, you know, if you have fish there, you have fish there.
Right. I also have a juvenile fish. Now, there's a place that I can go and just wiggle some stuff in the water and have these fish come up.
Hmm.
I'm not going to say what I wiggle, but I think Alan knows what I'm fooling around with.
Mm-hmm.
From our earlier conversation,
yeah,
I
sure
can wiggle that around. I can get fish that are like six.
Walt, you know, for those of us those of our listeners who've heard our earlier conversation and don't remember it, yeah, but we don't want to talk about wiggling anything in the water. So, but.
Now I'm talking about some bait.
Yeah, I know you are. I know you are. But
and like 6 to 8 inch fish. How old would these fish be?
That's last year's spawn,
which was last year's fry.
I think the third biggest in history of the
year. Yeah, something like that. So.
Okay, because I'm seeing it's an ungodly amount, and if I take a couple of kids out or something,
sure,
I bend the barbs down and put real big hooks on.
Yep,
and we can just float a bobber with a little twister, and the kids just get to giggling. It's just pleasing to the heart.
Good. Walt, thanks for the call, buddy. We have to move along to be fair to other callers.
One more quick one.
Real quick.
Does a female crab spawn more than once?
The female crab mates one time, but spawns multiple times. She can have more than one sponge.
Okay. Would
over the course of her lifetime.
Her bottom changes, she can have more.
Yeah, sure. After she mates, she can spawn. You know, the biologist will tell you 4 or 5 times, but some of the literature out there says that, you know, up to a dozen.
Really? So it goes from the peeler apron.
Yep.
To a normal looking adult female apron. After she has that apron, they can still spawn.
Right. No. Spawn. That's right.
I mean, they can have a living brood.
Yes.
Well, heck, that closes my. That makes the answer real easy for me about catching female crabs.
There you go.
See, I always was under the impression that they would only spawn once, and that's when they went from
the mature apron
to the mature apron.
They only mate one time, but they can have up to, you know, like I said, some of the literature says a dozen broods, so they can have more than one sponge throughout the season.
Goodness.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks, Walt.
Thank you.
See ya, David in Cambridge. Thanks for waiting. How you doing?
Hey, Alan, how's it going?
Good, buddy. What's new and exciting?
Oh, I'm on my way up to Kempton, Pennsylvania for the annual Muzzleloading Gunmakers Fair today.
Oh, man, that's...
Back to puppy drum.
Yeah, talk to us.
Oh, man, they're everywhere.
Okay.
Marty, my question on them is, what are the chances that this is the rebound of the Mid-Atlantic population of drum? Because I did some looking at on the DNR site for information on them. And it said that historically it was a separate population in the Mid-Atlantic that was decimated a long time ago. I mean, could this be the start of them coming back like croakers came back?
Well, that's a good question, David. I hope so. In fact, I'm going to look into it this week and talk to a few of the biologists. We have staff that's on the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission Technical Committee for the drum species, which red drum is part of. And I'll look into that. I want to say it's Harry Rickaball is our guy for that. But I will check on that and maybe give an update to Alan. But one of the things I think we'd say is, are we just seeing normally do these puppy drum just stay in a more southern point of distribution because of the salinities, and they're just higher up because this year has been drier? I don't know. But it is a really good question. I certainly hope that might be the case, that we've had a banner year class, and it's going to hopefully fuel the comeback of those fish, because we'd certainly like to see more of them. And I mean, they're great fish to catch. We're used to catching those bigger ones up here. Maybe we'll get a chance to catch some red drum of all sizes.
They're neat little fish to catch, and the growth rates are just astounding. I was catching them. Well, I'm catching a perch fish at the head of a little chop tank, and end of June they were 6 to 8 inches. And by this week, they're all 12 to 14-inch fish.
Wow. And you can get a citation for them, Dave. So
if
file for...
a citation for every one, I'll overrun you because I'm catching 2 dozen of them a day.
All right, buddy. Hey, enjoy your weekend up in Kempton, will you?
All right, I will.
All right, learn some new stuff.
I'll try.
Talk to you, buddy. Thanks, Dave.
See you guys.
See ya. Bye-bye. Dave Seacott, good friend, good contributor to the Maryland Hunting Quarterly, too. Good, excellent writer on sick of deer, diving ducks, building muzzleloaders, and more. But now it's time for me to tell you about our great sponsors, Fishbones Bait and Tackle, number one, 4729 Mountain Road in Pasadena. Just take Route 100 all the way to the end and hit Mountain Road. Head out towards Gibson Island, go 2.5 miles, and you'll find Fishbones Bait and Tackle, and that's what they sell, bait and tackle, not only for fishing but for crabbing as well. All the crabbing supplies and bait. They also have those great stainless steel, made in Maryland, crab steamers. They have three sizes, half bushel, bushel, bushel and a half. You're great for steaming all your crabs, and it's the last crab steamer you'll ever have to buy. Fishbones Bait and Tackle, 410-360-0573 for an up-to-date fishing report. Let me tell you about Tochterman's, another great fish and tackle store. Been there since 1916. Same family name, same location at 1919, 1925 for nearly a century. And third generation is there now. Tony and Dee Tochterman are in charge. And if you fish, you need to get in there. They're all fishing all the time. They have everything for the bay, for bass, for fly fishing. And I know you know about their fly fishing supplies, and they have experts to match. If you want to ask a fly fishing question, you ask the fly guy. You want to ask a bass fishing question, you ask Gene, the bass guy. They have terminal tackle. They have all the stuff you need for bottom fishing, for bait fishing, for offshore, for surf. You name it. They've got the great Yeti coolers. They've got the largest selection of Costa Del Mar sunglasses I've ever seen. And who could forget the biggest, most juicy, most tender, most succulent, most delicious, most scrumptious bloodworms for all types of fishing? That's right. Everything eats bloodworms. And they've got them at Tochterman's. You name it, they've got it. See Miss D, the worm girl, for all the latest updates on the most ginormous bloodworms you'll ever find. Did I mention they have bloodworms? Tochterman's, 1919-1925 Eastern Avenue, Fells Point, 327-6942. That's 410-327-6942. Give them a call. Stop by. You owe it to yourself to see those 1,000 fishing rods on display, 700 reels you can play with, and all the great lures and fishing tackle and fly stuff and sunglasses and Yeti coolers. 410-327-6942 for Tochterman's Bait and Tackle. And we got to tell you one more time about our buddies at Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. Look, you want to spray on bedliner? You don't need to know any more than Bay Linex is the best. They do the best job. They spray the most trucks. They're my friends. I've got a spray on bedliner that I use every single day. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie now offers Linex protection that can come to you, too. If you have a business and you need something that needs protection, call Bobby Hawkins. He'll bring the truck, he'll bring the mobile application, and he'll spray it. If it's an underground tank or, forklift, any industrial equipment, trailers, call him. If you want the best protection for your pickup truck bed, call them or go online. See all the products at baylinex.com or give Bobby Hawkins a call, 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199 for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. Find out how you can get a $30 Bass Pro Shop gift card just by mentioning Ellis Outdoors or the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Now more than just bedliners.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire.
Talk Radio 680 WCPM.
Hey, we're back here with Marty Gary, a biologist with Maryland Department of Natural Resources and front man for the Maryland Fishing Challenge, which goes now through Labor Day. And we have nearly 1,000 entries so far. Is that right? Is that what you told me?
Just a little short, but we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. Okay. We talked a little bit about puppy drum. We talked about suspended rockfish. We talked a lot about a lot of things. But, Marty, what would you like our listeners to take away from this broadcast in 1 minute about the Maryland Fishing Challenge?
Well,
and
I
then
would,
that'll be your commercial,
I would
and
just
I'll
say,
charge you for it.
I would just say get out and go fishing. And if you catch a cetacean fish, that's a fish of a certain size. We have over 80 eligible species, as you tell the folks, Alan. Check them in at any of our supporting partner bait and tackle stores. They're all over the state. And also patronize the major sponsors that, Alan, you've mentioned, Bass Pro Shops, World Fishing Network, Bill's Outdoor Center, and Under Armour.
Yep.
And it's a great contest, runs year-round, and still got another month to go. So
there you go, another month to go. And Diamond Jim, he's going to be out there, you know, tagging the August stock or group or whatever this coming week. And that fish, if you catch him by the end of August, $25,000. And if Diamond Jim isn't caught, that pool of 25 grand goes to everybody who catches one of the Diamond Jim tagged fish. You gotta love it. Man, you want to hope that nobody catches one if you're an angler and you got one in the bag. You know what I mean? I mean, those four guys that have, if those four tagged fish work out, those